And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
"755 is Real" with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty is on the air now. Welcome, welcome, welcome back to 755 is Real, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. I'm David O'Brien, Braves writer for The Athletic. I'm with my co-host, Eric O'Flaherty, former Braves reliever. What's going on, Eric?
What's up, Dave?
How you doing, man?
Good.
You recover from your wiffle ball tournament?
No.
Huh?
No, I'm hurting. My hangovers last like 3 days. I don't know why. I'm getting old.
Wait, but how you got a hangover from a wiffle ball tournament?
Because we were in the sun drinking the whole day.
So they like to bring in the ringer for the wiffle ball tournament, bring in the former major league pitcher and have you pitch?
No, I sucked. Those balls move like, 15 feet.
So yours probably moves 20 feet, huh?
I couldn't throw a strike.
Wow.
It's a lonely feeling even when you're in a wiffle ball tournament and can't throw a strike.
And everybody there knows that you're a former big leaguer and you're like, holy shit, this guy can't even throw a strike in wiffle ball.
Oh, they love it. They loved it. They love watching me squirm. It's okay. I'm going to practice for next year.
Where's this wiffle ball tournament? Walla Walla?
Yeah. This dude that...
Walla Walla wiffle ball.
It was funny because they told me I could get on the wait list. And I was like, I'm not on a wait list for a damn wiffle ball tournament. If you don't have a spot for me, I'm out. And my buddy was telling me about it for a couple years. They do it every summer. They get tons and tons of people out there, about 60 dudes and 4 people on a team. It's one of the best times I've had, but I wound up getting in last minute and I said, screw it, I'll go play. And it was definitely worth it. I mean, just a good time. What did you say?
You would think they would make room for a former major leaguer. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
That was kind of my mindset, but now I'm in. If you play, you got a spot the next year, and I'm not giving my spot up. Shit's fun.
See, they could put that on the ads next year however they fucking solicit participants.
Well, they don't really do it. It's just at a guy's house.
Former major leaguers.
he's got a bunch of property, and they set up real fields with real fences and scoreboards.
Really?
And it's just a party. It's not really like a open invitation to the city. They just find a bunch of people they like. But the dude owns one of the better bars in town, so he knows enough degenerates to put it together and make it pretty fun.
I'm waiting for some plays of the day to appear on SportsCenter, man, from this thing with the fields and all that manicured.
It was sick. It was cool. I'm doing it again.
Speaking of sick, we'll get to Jock Peterson here in a second. Jacob DeGrom and Francisco Lindor are both on the IL for the Mets. We keep waiting for the Mets to kind of put some distance between them and the field, and it ain't happening. Suddenly, the Phillies are arguably the most formidable team in the East, or at least the hottest team in the East right now, which I don't think anybody – I think we all kind of thought the Phillies were going to drop off, and they haven't. And right now, they look like the biggest threat for the Mets. But I think this race is going to come down to who wants to make the biggest deal at the trade deadline. And we know Dave Dombrowski, if whatever he's got resources, he will gladly spend them if he thinks he can make a deal to put this team over the top.
Well, they're 2.5 back now. That's kind of the thing is, you look at what the Braves are doing and it's tempting to just call it a year, how much they've struggled, how things have gone. But then you look around the division, you're like, nobody's just hands down better than them. As bad as things have gone and as bad as they've played, they could get hot the next couple of weeks, but it's definitely going to, somebody has to separate themselves. And I bet you we're still right here when the deadline comes. And that's going to be a real tough decision for a GM.
And now the Phillies, Braves go head-to-head with the Phillies and the Mets. 9 games in 8 days starting Thursday.
They'd be first place.
Could be. I wrote about this. A couple of days ago. You said it's tempting to kind of just say, you know, it's not our year and give up. What people maybe don't realize is it's beyond the decision that it might have been years ago at Turner Field or at the former ballpark for that, because the Braves have so much tied up financially in getting people to keep coming to the ballpark, both at the Battery, the restaurants and the bars and all that over there, because those are cash registers right now. They are bringing in money because this place is packed. They've had, I think it's 10 sellouts now because they just sold out one in the series that just completed against the Rays.
And they've only been at full capacity
since the third homestand. So they've sold out 9 or 10 games. They're leading the majors in home attendance. So right now they are fully exploiting that they're making money at where they made no money last year on all of that, obviously, when there were no games and then there was no attendance. So now they're packing a place for the most part, and they got some really attractive matchups too in the second half. And the Braves get a piece of that, all that goes on in the Battery, you know, the restaurants, bars, all that. So they can't afford really to wave the white flag and tell everybody, okay, these games, we're giving up on the season. Thanks for coming, you know. And because you're going to watch the walk-up crowds just disappear, especially on bad weather days or whatever. And it's also going to really hurt next year's season ticket base if you were to give up now rather than pushing, you know. So especially in a race that's winnable, the signal it sends is not good. So that's why I don't think you're going to see the Braves give up. I think they're either going to make small moves to try to stay in it, or they're going to make big moves and go for it, try to win this thing. And I will not be at all surprised if they make a pretty big move.
I'm trying to think, because even when I played, you know, like once September hit, usually attendance would fall off once football started. But I think the years that we were in it, we definitely drew better. But if they need that attendance, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it's the factor. I mean, and they're getting good attendance, man.
Yeah.
Last night, that place was packed for the Padres before the game was banked. I mean, it was already pretty much three quarters full before the game was banked at like 8. And it was a dreary day all day. It didn't look like they could play all day. So, got to play one against the Padres today. They're going to try to tonight. We'll forecast this again bad. If they had a day game today, they'd get this thing in. But I don't know about tonight. But anyway, they got to get these games in. And then they got a doubleheader Wednesday before they go on the road and play 9 games in 8 days against the Phillies and Mets. So if you think about it, it's 3 games in 2 days plus 9 and 8. They got 12 games in 10 days starting tonight.
Hopefully they just get hot and make a big move.
Against the Padres, Phillies, and Mets. Bad time for Ian Anderson to be on the IL, obviously, because they're going to need a 6th starter.
Did you get any more information on that, or is it just the inflammation?
Just inflammation. That's all we heard. He's set down for 7 to 10 days, and then they'll reevaluate. But for now, that's what we got. And you know, it's going to be interesting. Will the Mets make the big move? They got the big talking owner that says they're in this to win it, you know, and all that. He's indicated in the past that he's willing to spend and all that. Well, now they got a need. They're going to have a need. Will they try to? I mean, Jacob DeGrom's been kind of iffy all year. He dominates when he's in there. And then he's something nagging. He comes out of the game. So I don't know that they can count on him for the whole stretch drive, but they certainly need him to do what they want to do. But then Lindor was starting to perform a lot better. And now he's on the IL. So do they make a move to add? I don't know.
That's the situation with the Mets always. When you watch their seasons, it's like every time they start putting it together, there's some big injury. Or when they have everybody, they just go through a shitty stretch. But that's another reason why, you know, me watching it, it's like,
yeah,
as bad as it's gone for the Braves, the Mets can go south for them quick. You know, I mean, I think it's a lot of the pressure playing in New York. They did switch up ownership, which I think, you know, looking from the outside seems to have made a huge difference. But I'm always kind of watching them like this thing could fall apart any minute, and the Braves are 4 back. You know, if the Phillies made some huge moves and took off, you know, maybe that'd make you doubt it. But
yeah,
when you're 4.5 back, man, I mean, you can come back in a week.
I know. And fans, I understand the frustrations, and they're all like, oh, football's about to start. Give up. Don't trade any of the young guys. Retool for next year and everything. But that's not how the teams think when they're in it, for the most part.
That's not how the players think, for sure.
Especially not a team that's won three in a row, and just the factors I just stated, you know, about attendance and how important it is and all that. But when you've won three in a row, you're not ready to give it up when you're four or five games back with 70 to play, you know?
No.
And you got a GM that's been there to the playoffs 6 years in a row. And you got a guy like Freddie Freeman, who's in the prime of his career. You're not ready to just give this thing up and aim for next year. It's not that easy. And they're not thinking from a fan's perspective. And that's good, because, you know, this is their livelihood. Yeah. So if they've got a chance to get in the tournament, I think baseball players know what a crapshoot it can be in the postseason once you get in there, how much it depends on how good your starter is that night. And if you get a start like Max Fried had a couple of days ago, or start like Charlie Morton has produced in most of his games lately, who's to say they can't win at least a division series?
But that was always the logic. Mm-hmm. That, like, the whole time I was playing, it was just find a way to get your foot in the door. You know, if you were close enough to strike and maybe just get into the playoffs, everybody believed anything can happen once you get in. And you just go for it. You find a way to get in. And even if you look at the Braves, if you got a good start from Charlie and Fried, and then you have Smiley's throwing the ball well, or Mueller keeps doing how he's looked, you could beat a lot of teams.
Especially if you add a bullpen piece.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. But, you know, it's funny because Braves fans that are old enough, which I would hope is most Braves fans, to remember – how many times the Braves were on the other foot or on the other end of this equation, because there were so many times where they were clearly the best team in the division, if not the best team in the league, where they won 95 to 98 games or whatever. And then they got in the postseason and lost in the first or second round.
Yep.
That it just underscores how anything can happen. And the best team over the course of 162 is quite often not the team that wins in a short series.
No,
or goes all the way. It's rarely do you even see the best team record wise win the whole thing.
Wild card teams win it.
Yeah,
so like the Cardinals were 10 games back. I think we had 10 game. Were we 10 more than the Cardinals in 2012?
Yeah,
you know, I mean, teams just sneak in and then get hot at the right time. And
Nationals.
Yeah, I think it's just. I don't know if that mindset's still as strong as it used to be because of the way that, you know, they're analyzing it and saying what our real odds are, whether they're going to tear it down or keep going. You know, I've brought up before, but I saw the Mariners win 89 games 2 or 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, and they decided to rebuild. And the city hasn't been to the playoffs since 2001. And I was looking at it like, man, do you know what it'd do for this city just to get a first round knockout in the playoffs, but just for people to get to go to Safeco Field and feel that energy of a playoff series? And they said, well, we know we can't get past the Astros, and they did a rebuild. That logic's brand new. It didn't used to be like that. It was just get your foot in the door and see what happens.
And too often these rebuilds don't work. Not the way they would. Look at Seattle. Look at Pittsburgh. Yeah. How many times has Pittsburgh rebuilt without even going to the postseason? You know?
Yeah.
You can try to rebuild and say you're rebuilding, but there's no guarantee that rebuilding is going to result, because you got injuries, you got underperformance. You can project all you want, but you can't project injuries, and you can't project guys' mentality. Some guys just don't have it to do what you think. They're not going to just keep developing, because that's what people do.
Yeah, and if you dick it up, you set your city back another 6 years.
And try to get people to come out then.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've watched it firsthand here where it's, you know, I know – I meet Mariners. I'll talk to dude at the golf course or somewhere out, and they're asking me what I think of the Mariners. And I'm just like, you know, I really haven't watched, because I know they have a process going right now. So I don't really have any take on what they're doing. I think they're starting to play better and do more. But those rebuilds, man, if you mess them up, it sets you back another 6 or 7 years. Yeah.
And you rebuild around a guy like Haniger, then you trade him before you get good. You know, it's like rebuilds they rarely do they work. And the Braves got lucky. Their rebuild worked. It worked faster than they had anticipated. 3 years, they went from, you know, 90 losses to three straight years with 90 wins, you know? So, but that's theirs wasn't the total teardown rebuild that some have been, although, you know, it really was, even though they said they were walking. They were being competitive while rebuilding. They really weren't, but they hit on guys like Acuna. I mean, you just couldn't, who weren't even that, didn't even cost that much to sign. Guys,
so much of that's luck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a guy like Freddie wanting to stay here, you know, rather than wanting to be traded, you know. A guy like Ozzie, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't even the big picks and the stuff you get, you know, trading guys away or mm-hmm. losing and getting that high draft pick that did it.
So, I think it's going to come down to who makes the biggest moves at the trade deadline, really. Who makes the one impact move. I mean, can you imagine this Braves team, how the outlook changes if they were to swing, say, next week, a deal for Joey Gallo and Ian Kennedy from the Rangers, their closer? All of a sudden, it doesn't fix everything, but that bullpen looks a lot tougher when you've got another closer in there who's been really lights out this year, and you can move everybody else down a spot, you know?
I think that would be really big, you know, just stabilizing that pen a little bit, moving a few guys back. You know, the thinner you get, all of a sudden you have guys that aren't able to match up and get those easy outings that build confidence. Mm-hmm. You have to start throwing them in the eighth when maybe they're not ready, or throwing them in a big situation where they're not ready, and then they give it up, and then it's a thing. And now the bullpen is struggling. You know, every spot you can stabilize in that pen is huge.
Yeah. Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Kyle Muller, who they sent down to Gwinnett just before the break, only because they didn't need five starters that last week, because he was pitching really well. That start at Cincinnati was outstanding. But he'll be back from AAA to start. He was going to start Monday's series opener. Instead, he starts tonight, which is now the series opener after Monday's game was rained out. So he goes against the Padres tonight. I'm really looking forward to that, see what he does against that lineup. God, I just wish Acuna was playing and we'd have Tatis and Acuna in the same series. Yeah. That would be outstanding, man. But Muller gets the start. He had a 1.80 ERA in his two starts at Gwinnett, 2 walks, 15 strikeouts, which is obviously encouraging. Kept doing what he was doing here. Then you play a doubleheader, Braves and Padres, on Wednesday, provided they can get it in. Forecast looks bad tonight. Looks better Wednesday, but got a split doubleheader. Gotta hate those split doubleheaders. We talked about that.
They suck.
Noon and 5 o'clock starts. I guess, though, you got a 5-hour window to get the first one in if you have a couple rain delays.
Yeah, but I don't think you can move the first one up. You know, if you see that the rain's coming at 7 o'clock or whatever it is, you can't move that. Or the second one, you can't move it up.
No.
It's got to be that late start time.
Yeah. They'll play that split doubleheader, and then the Braves go on the road for 9 games in 8 days. It's going to could very well decide the season, you know, at least right up to the trade deadline. So it's going to be, we've said it 100 times, but this really is the stretch where the season is going to be determined, I think, between that and the trade deadline that's right there. So these next couple of weeks, you got Tuki Toussaint. I'm really looking forward to seeing Tuki in game one of the doubleheader on Wednesday. He has been all year on the IL with a shoulder issue. Really looked good in his last couple of rehab starts at Gwinnett. 2-0, 1.50 ERA, 0.75 whip, a 1.32 opponent's batting average in those two starts. Great strikeouts to walk ratio. If he can kick that into this start, keep doing what he was doing there, it's going to be interesting. He could also draw some attention from other suitors, you know, because he's kind of going to make 2 or 3 starts if he looks good, because they need him with Ian out.
Yeah, there's a couple of dudes that, you know, I think Tuki and Kyle have been guys that you don't want to give up on, but they if they got that change of scenery, they're the type of guys that with a fresh start could Kyle go Wright. Somewhere. Kyle Wright. I feel like they could be the guys that you trade and it comes back to bite you.
I definitely agree on Tukey.
But yeah, I mean, we'll see what they do, because I think a lot of teams would still be interested with the stuff they got.
Yeah, and still young too.
Mm-hmm.
Tukey was a former first rounder. He's still young. I know it seems like he's not because he got here so early, but he's young, man. Still throws hard. Still got a terrific breaking ball. Still athletic. Charlie Morton starts the second game of that doubleheader, by the way, Wednesday. So the other thing I want to ask you about, this is crazy, man. I've never seen anything like the Braves this year with their catchers. They have gone through, I think, all of the mid-30s catchers, guys that are hanging around, backup types, mid-30s. They've used them all this year. They've acquired and used them all because they just got Stephen Vogt a couple days ago. 36 years old, nine-year veteran. I mean, Jonathan LaCroix played two games for the Braves, got DFA. You bring in Vogt, who's having a much better year, and who's really good blocking balls, that kind of thing.
Yep.
But and he comes in and has three hits in his first game with the Braves. Vogt did his first start. July, he's hit .381 with a .959 OPS and 23 plate appearances, seven games. So they're trying to catch, you know, got swinging a hot bat right now, and they're trying to piece it together, as Snit said, until Darno gets back. And that was a good pickup because they gave up nothing to get him. I mean, nothing. They gave up a 25-year-old rookie ball first baseman. I don't know what the Diamondbacks were thinking, if they just got – nobody offered anything for Vogt, but that was just a body they sent there. So, but – what is that? Seven catchers in the first 90 games of a season, dude. What's that like for a pitcher?
I think it's hard on everybody. Yeah, it's always tough throwing to a new catcher because they're guessing.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you get traded, you don't have time to catch pens. You don't have time to really work with the dudes, talk to them too much, talk to coaches about them. And all of a sudden you're just in a game and it's the seventh inning and a reliever comes in that you've never caught before. And if you're not the type of relief pitcher, and I wasn't, that wants to call your own game, and you're relying on the catcher, you know, my thing was, I was always like, you know, this guy's watched the whole game. He's watched what this guy's trying to do.
Uh-huh.
I'd assume they know my stuff. They'd seen a few warming up. So I want to let the guy that's been back there the whole game dictate this inning. And, you know, you throw to a new catcher and they don't know that about you. And they're just kind of like, fastball away, but you could see him kind of like tilt their head.
Yeah.
Is this what you like?
Yeah.
And you throw it and they think, well, this guy's a sinker guy. So then they call it again and again and again, and you go 1-0, 2-0, 3-0. And then they call something different. Maybe throw a strike and they go back to your strength. You know, when you have a catcher that you've been throwing to a lot, they'll know, all right, if he misses with his sinker, I need to call something to the other side of the plate or a breaking ball to get him back in the count. But it takes time to go through those battles with guys, you know, spring training, things like that, to learn them. And when you get tossed as a catcher into a game and all of a sudden the dude's in trouble and you don't even know what he likes to do to get out of trouble, it's just guessing, you know. So when that's not there, there's just instant doubt. You know, when you see a catcher kind of tilt his head, like, is this what you like?
And you like kinda a dog? Like,
yeah, I don't know what I like. You know, I like to let you guys dictate that. You know, that kind of bit me a few times. It was easy for most of my career because I had BMAC and Rossi and guys like that back there.
Yeah.
But when you get that feeling and you feel like the catcher's guessing, it puts doubt in your mind about the pitch you're about to throw versus when the catcher just throws it down, hits his glove, like, let's go. You know, just that difference in the communication between you and the catcher gives you more confidence to throw the pitch. So I'm sure that's been hard, especially on relievers. Starters get to spend a lot of time with them talking about it before the game.
Uh-huh.
But relief pitchers, you know, a guy shows up, you just kind of wing it. So I'm sure that's been hard. It's not easy on the catcher. It's probably a terrible feeling to be back there making calls to decide a game on a team you've just met everybody yesterday.
I guess a bullpen that's struggling.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough spot, but guy like at the mentor, same time,
you're trying to help him through, you know, and he's just struggling.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's probably, I mean, it's a part of it.
Get this, man. Drew Smyly, as well as he's pitched, this will even give more appreciation of what he's done. The guy has had all seven catchers this year, his starts. He's pitched to seven different catchers in his starts. He had six starts with William Contreras, three with Travis d'Arnaud, one apiece with Alex Jackson, Jonathan LaCroix, Jeff Mathis, and Stephen Vogt, and three with Kevin Smith.
That's tough.
Insane.
That is tough. I was watching the LaCroix start, and he gave up. I wanted to see how it went. You know, I wanted to see, and he had a rough first inning, and then he locked in, you know, and then they cruised. But that's the learning curve of, you know, if you get in trouble, you're behind 2-0. Do you want to throw a breaking ball, or do you want to challenge hitters? Do you like to be aggressive? Not knowing and having to guess. And then there's, you know, you always trust your catcher, like they see something here. So that just discomfort between each other, you know, I mean, it takes time to settle in. But I was watching that one, and I mean, it's tough. You keep throwing to a new dude every time. That's tough.
I mean, I'd like to go back and look at like how many catchers during his entire Braves career Smoltz had, or Maddox had, or Glavine had when they were with the Braves, you know, like three. Three or four, maybe a little more for Smoltz, but not many. I mean, not as many as this guy's had in 1 year.
Yeah. That's hard.
Speaking of mentor, man, this guy has been confounding this year, dude. Something just changed on the Braves. We got news breaking as we're recording here. We got Tukey starting tonight, and Mueller is game one tomorrow now. Morton is still game two tomorrow. So that was just changed.
Okay.
Tukey Toussaint starting tonight, Tuesday night. Mueller game one tomorrow. Morton game two tomorrow. But yeah, Mentor, dude, what have you seen from Mentor this year to make? Last year, this is a guy with a sub one ERA. And this year, he's optioned back to AAA.
Just, you know, confidence. And it's, he has to be really good with the package he's throwing. You know, I saw him throwing a changeup at times, but that hasn't been a pitch for him as much. But, you know, with his stuff, he's got a four seam that seems to have some natural cut to it. Mm-hmm. And then he's got a cutter. So when he faces right-handers, they know everything's coming into him. It makes it pretty easy for the hitters just to look in one spot. And if he doesn't paint that fastball away, they can just kind of zero in on one small zone against him, you know. And then if you couple that with not throwing strikes, it's going to be really tough. You know, he's never had a wipeout slider, which, you know, if he had Will Smith's breaking ball,
yeah,
he'd be unhittable.
I thought he did, you know, when he first came up that first year, when he had like 16, 17 appearances at the end of the year, I thought he was going to have that slider, but yeah, it's never,
it's more of a cutter. And I've talked about that before. Yep. Like some guys just can't figure out how to manipulate the ball to get that depth to the breaking ball. And his has always just been kind of real side to side. But if you're always expecting the ball to cut a little bit, when he throws a fastball in, they can shut down on it, you know, because they think it's going to cut in off the plate. And his breaking ball does the same thing. Mm-hmm. So they're all looking for that same movement coming into him. It makes it really hard. You have to be locked in, and he has to be on to put up his numbers. And when he's off, this is what's going to happen.
Had an 0.83 ERA in 22 appearances last season. Yep. That's starting to look like the outlier, though it's certainly not to the degree of, say, Mike Fulton, Nevich's outlier of an all-star season. By the way, have you seen what Fulton's doing this year, man?
Yeah, he's having a rough one.
Near 5 ERA. Over 5 ERA. He's got the second highest ERA in the majors, near 6 ERA. 28 home runs allowed already, dude. 28. We're 90 games into the season. Nobody else in the majors has allowed more than 21 homers. He's allowed 28.
That hurts.
Four homers the other day with 5 outs recorded.
Yeah, and that's actually kind of a pitcher's park from what I see.
Yeah. It is big.
Baseball's like that, man. I mean, you could, and it's just like what I'm saying with Minter. If he locks in and he makes his pitches and he's feeling good and his confidence is up, he can keep doing it. But when his confidence gets down and maybe he starts trying to overthrow, you know, it's, people ask me all the time, you know, what the difference is between each level going up and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, you get into pro ball and everybody's kind of got the same skill set. And there's just guys that can separate by learning, you know, one wipeout pitch, or they're just so much tougher up here to keep it going. But most players are, you know, a bad couple games or losing their confidence or a bad habit away from just completely sucking at all times.
Yeah. To give credence to that, what you were saying about probably trying too hard overthrowing, his numbers get worse as you get runners on base, runners in scoring position. He's really, last year he thrived in those spots, and this year he's just basket case in those spots. Numbers wise, they're terrible. He's not even getting lefties out.
Okay, but if you're in that situation and you got a 1-2 ERA and you've been hot, you know, what's a runner on first, no outs? But if you've had 3, 4, 5 bad games in a row and it starts up, it's like, you know, if I have this and I have another bad game, I'm still struggling. So there's that much more pressure to get out of it. You know, that's just that here we go again mindset that I talk about all the time. You have to get out of that mentally as a player, but you can feel that energy in the crowd. You're the dude that's been sucking lately. And you walk the first dude and they're booing, and it's all amplified, and all that pressure builds so much more when you're struggling. That's why it's so much harder for guys to get out of their struggles, because of all the energy surrounding it. And you got to control your own brain too.
He's 1-4, 4.86 ERA in 42 appearances. He struggled for like the last 15 or so, but the last 10, it's been really acute. He's 7.45 ERA in his last 10 games, 2 losses, 2 blown saves, 17 hits allowed, 9 and 2/3 innings, 17 hits, 8 earned runs, 4 walks, and 9 and 2/3 innings. I mean, that's almost two hits an inning.
Yeah. How many walks?
4.
So he's throwing strikes at least. Well, somewhat. 4 is still a lot of walks in 9.
Yeah. You know, when you go back, what's crazy is I remember when he came up in 17, he had that streak going where he hadn't walked anybody. And we're like, this guy didn't walk anybody. That when he came up that year, 16 appearances in 17 when he got brought up first time, 26 strikeouts and 2 walks in 15 innings that year.
Confidence.
Anyway, very interesting. You know, after I thought, you know, with what Tomlin and him and all the work they'd done mentally and physically, you know, during the shutdown last year, during the pandemic back home in Texas, I thought really he'd turned his career around. I thought he had a new mindset, you know, aggressiveness, and had used that change up. And I just thought he was going to be a different guy now. But this year has been a struggle. Whew.
Yeah, if he would have started the year hot, you know, I mean, for me, if he would have started the year hot, it could be a completely different year altogether. You know, so much of it is confidence. And
yeah,
you lose it, man. You're in trouble.
The Braves, what stunk was for the Braves, what sucked was that he blew that lead Sunday. They had leads in the first and second games of that series against the Rays. They could have easily swept the Rays, and they won 1 out of 3 games. They blew 7th inning leads, the kind which they just did not blow last year. They won every one of those games last year when they had a lead after 6 innings. And this year they
wasn't it 27-0 or something?
Yeah. This year it's a coin flip, man. It's a coin flip. But the one game they won against the Rays was like a high point. One of the high points of the season so far, in that Jock Peterson made his first start for the Braves, hits a home run. I mean, comes in, does the chop thing in the dugout, gets the panda hug with the bear head from Sandoval. And Max Fried had one of the most terrific all around games you're going to see from a pitcher in that game. I mean, 7 scoreless innings for the second time in his career, allowed 4 hits, 1 walk. Improved his interleague record is astounding. 9 interleague starts, the guy's 8-0 with a 1.82 ERA career.
Mm.
But that was only the beginning of it. He goes 3-for-3 with a 2-out, 2-run single. He has a pickoff. The only guy that reached base in the first couple of 3 innings, well, he picked Wander Franco. He picked him off. Franco obviously doesn't know the move that Fried has. He picked him off at first base right away. So, I mean, he showed everything that Fried can do in that game. Snit compared him to Huddy, you know, the way Huddy used to be able to handle the bat and be athletic and all that. I think Fried might be an even better hitter. Huddy was like a really great hitter in college, but Fried is, I think, legit, like Ankiel. I think legit he could be a position player if he ever needed to or wanted to, you know, if he had to, God forbid, some type of arm injury or whatever. But he looks that good at the plate and that good running.
Yeah, I don't think he'd have the power to get that job, but he can definitely – he has a good enough swing to – when you watch his swing, it's a good swing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a quality swing he puts on it. I think Jock was talking about that.
Yeah.
But He's just a good athlete, you know?
Yeah, I don't think in today's game he'd have the power to do it, but he could hit for average and get on base. He's nine for the year. He's 9 for 27. He's hitting .333, two doubles, five RBIs, two walks, and a 787 OPS. Only pitcher with more hits is Jacob DeGrom. He's got 12. Peterson, yeah, Peterson was funny. He said, he goes, the dude rakes. He said he might have to be Shohei Ohtani soon, huh? I said, I think he had three hits. I'm like, man, I better start getting some knocks. The pitcher's getting knocks here. I better hurry up. He's got a pretty swing, too. He said they weren't luck.
No. I think Jocko, he seems to be fitting right in already.
Yeah, yeah. He's got that type of personality. He's a perfect guy to trade for during the season because he just, boom.
He always got that look on his face. You know, I mean, you kind of like him even if you don't know him because he always looks like he's just having fun, you know, and just got that. He looks like that guy that always has a joke he's not telling you about in his head.
You know, you say hi to him.
Yeah.
And he's not reluctant or whatever, or sheepish. No. You know, he lets his personality flourish even within, in a new surroundings, which is kind of hard. There's not many guys that can do that. And when those are the kind of guys you want to get in a midseason trade, obviously. Josh Donaldson's like that, you know. Yep. But they didn't get him in a midseason trade. But those personalities that but Peterson doesn't rub anybody the wrong way, as far as I can tell, that are on his team. They really like the energy that he's brought so far. But in that game, by the way, Freed was only the second Braves pitcher this century, the first in 20 years to have at least three hits and two RBIs in a game. The last guy, Terry Mulholland.
Damn.
Not Smoltzy. Terry Mulholland in 2000. The Rays must not have looked too far into that scouting report. I thought it was a fluke when Mattingly intentionally walked Kevin Smith with the bases loaded. Remember, and Freed stepped up and got that walk-off hit.
Yep.
So they do the same. Cash does the same thing. Intentionally walks him with first base open. Intentionally walks Kevin Smith again with first base open. This time, Freed delivers again. So that's twice in 2 weeks that he's done that. With Kevin Smith intentionally walked in front of him.
You're never going to assume, I don't care what pitcher it is, unless it's Ohtani, you're never going to assume, you know, a guy that probably hits BP, you know, 3-4 times a week, doesn't get at bats, like a player that's dedicated his life to being able to hit. You're always going to pick the pitcher over a position player, you know. But if it backfires, it's awesome.
Freed's 18 pickoffs, by the way, since his debut season in 17. Those are the most pickoffs in the majors in that span.
Who else has a lot? Kershaw? Kershaw gets quite a few. He's got a balk move. So does Freed.
Everybody that has a good move is borderline balk move, isn't it? Yeah.
Julio. Julio's was a balk. They never called it.
Yeah. Freed, man. If I was at first base, if I was running with Freed, I would just stay there. Because, I mean, that move is so – you cannot tell when he's coming over.
He picks them off when they're not even going. They're going to get their secondary, and then the ball's coming to first.
Yeah, they have a pretty conservative lead, and all of a sudden the ball's there. It's like, holy shit, what happened?
Yeah.
They always have that look like, what? I wasn't even running.
I lefty moves, man. For whatever reason, I could never sell one. And then there's dudes like Freed that can just – their balance is so good and their tempo's so good when they're going to first. They can just sell it and move the same and then just come this way. It's a great tool to have.
Guys, let's take a quick break, and then we'll finish up the show.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Jocktober, Jock Peterson. The Braves hope that he's able to show why his nickname is Jocktober. His Dodgers teammates gave him that because this guy has come through. They've got arguably the best postseason pitcher of the last 5, 6, 7 years. Jock Peterson could make an argument he's the best hitter of the postseason hitter in the last that same span because he has raked in the postseason again and again with the Dodgers. He did it beginning with his 3 homers in a World Series, 17? But he's had the Braves have seen it a couple times. He's killed them a couple times in division series and last year in the LCS with the 4-hit game last year with the 3-run homer in the first inning when they blew him out in that first inning. This guy comes through in the postseason. Braves just hope they got a chance. He helps them get him there. He's looked really good so far. The big thing, I think the most encouraging thing is that he hit the homer and another hit off a lefty. The one hit off a lefty was an inside, you know, off the hands, but still, the home run was a pretty swing off a lefty, Fleming.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was talking about. You know, I mean, there's situations where you get put on a team and the way they do things is you just don't get to hit off a same side. You know, you lefty-lefty, righty-righty. There's guys that don't get that chance. And it's not that they can't do it, but they're never going to get better without getting a chance to, you know, basically practice it and do it in games, you know. Those guys always, if there's an injured lefty or somebody like that, and they're going to throw live at bats, those guys are always jumping in trying to see the ball from that side. But it's just not quite the same when you're in the game. And, you know, he might be able to hit lefties. He's just never gotten that opportunity. And maybe he's worse against them and he's not quite the same or doesn't have as much power. But it didn't seem like he really got a chance in L.A. to even prove whether he could do that or not.
Early on, he did. And then once they started platooning him, they just stuck with it, you know?
You get that stamp, you know, it never comes off.
So he's going to get that chance here. They're not platooning him. And as long as he keeps doing that, they won't platoon him. So we'll see. You know, I don't think it's everybody thinks it's a given probably that they're not going to pick up that option. But depending on how the collective bargaining agreement goes, how the market goes this offseason, who's out there, you could do a lot worse, depending on how he hits the rest of the way, than pick up a $10 million option on Jock Peterson or pay a $2.5 million buyout.
So it's basically a $7.5 million decision whether you want to keep him or not.
Yeah. And he's a good fielder.
Yeah.
You know? So.
No, he's playing center field for a while. I've seen him in center plenty.
And brings a lot. He was their opening day center fielder way back in the day, but the Dodgers. But what he brings, I think the whole package is we'll see what he does. It's too much to go, but I mean, $10 million is not outrageous for a guy like that that's done what he's done.
Is it mutual, or it's just an?
It is mutual.
Okay,
it is mutual.
So that if he goes off,
yeah,
that's the tough thing. Is it? Yeah,
right.
Those options have to land in a sweet spot where the player performed good enough that. But bad enough that he doesn't feel like he can go out and get more, but good enough that the team still wants to pay him that option. Those things rarely.
If he likes it here and the collective bargaining agreement could play into that too, you know, if you're a player, you're going to have to make that decision right after the World Series. And you don't know what's going to be out there. The landscape. You're like, I might have to sign a minor league deal, you know?
Yeah. After all that COVID COVID last year, how the teams and that thing was so ugly. I'm glad it's in the past and haven't had to talk about it again, but I don't think that the teams or the players have forgotten about that.
And so many guys had to take so much less than they thought they were going to. And so many guys had to sign minor league deals that never thought they would have had to. So to no one's surprise, Freddie Freeman, or shouldn't be to anyone's surprise, is raking. And it is miraculous what he has done to his numbers in a span of a couple of months. He went from middle of May going, this just might be that year Chipper talked about when he hit 240. This might be the year. And remember, Freddie said, I don't want to have a year where I hit 240 with 30 home runs. It's not what I want to do. And now look at his numbers are basically back where they should be. The OPS is almost over 900 now. And the guy just hit back homers and back-to-back games, four homers in five games stretched through Saturday.
His numbers will just look like another year at the end of the year. You know, when you look back at this season, it'll just be like, yep, Freddie did what Freddie did again. But it won't tell the story of where he was at early on.
He did a really good job.
He did a really good job sticking with his, you know, like he said, when he was hitting the ball hard, things weren't working. He did a good job just sticking to his plan and being himself. And that's what I'm talking about with guys like, you know, maybe mentor gets in trouble. You start trying to do too much. You start trying to change things and guessing. Mm-hmm. And Freddie did a really good job. And that's just veteran experience, you know, sticking to your strength.
What he had through Saturday, I didn't update it Sunday, but he had 439 with 25 hits and four homers in 15 games. And those four homers have come in the last five, but 25 hits in 15 games. A lot of those balls that were just hitting right at people are going for hits now, like he said. Yep. He's just driving the ball, using all fields again. He looks like Freddie. So if they keep Dansby Swanson doing what he's been doing lately, Jock Peterson addition, I say you swing for what, if you could swing a deal for one guy, God, if it could be Gallo, guy like that. But if you bring in one guy, this lineup looks a whole lot better than it did a few weeks ago. That's for sure. When you had the bottom half of it basically was journeyman and backup types, you know, filling four spots.
Yeah. I mean, just solidify things, you know, and hope that the team has some guys coming back and Noah comes back, Darnold comes back. And if you can just tread water until that point and maybe improve at the deadline, get your foot in the door. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see where they stand in a few days here. It's not going to surprise me if a trade happens, you know, out of the blue. That's the way it happens with seemingly out of the blue with Alex Anthopoulos. There's rarely any hints or leaks before it happens. Like Jock Peterson. Nobody in Chicago, nobody anywhere had that coming when it happened. So, and he pulled off the trade for Stephen Vogt at like midnight after a game.
I was just thinking, you know, those are two pretty good clubhouse guys too. That might be an angle they're playing.
Yeah, it is for sure. The LaCroix replaced by him, that was a lot to do with it right there.
Yeah.
It wants the right guys in this, especially when they're struggling like they are. You know how important that is during these times where, you know, you're trying to hold this whole thing together, how important it is that everybody's.
Yeah.
Nobody's starting to talk shit about the manager or the moves that have or hadn't been made or, you know, screw this, I'm going to get mine.
That's a part of it right there for sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, we will talk again on Friday from here after this. Where are we going to be? God, it's a blur now. Philly, going to Philly on Thursday. I will be there. I'm going to do that whole trip, Philly and New York. And we will talk from Philly on Thursday and see where the Braves stand, man, as this thing gets inches closer to nut-cutting time and trade deadline time and everything else. So, all right.
Cool.
755 is real. We're out.